Welcome back to The Nine. He is Justin Bourne, down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. He joins us every Thursday at this time. And Justin, let's jump right in this week because a very special night last night in Vancouver. What did you make of the Canucks ceremony for the Sedin twins last night?
As you said, like, special is the right word for it. It really was. And, you know, I grew up in Kelowna, BC, and spent a lot of time watching a lot of Canucks games. And, you know, they meant something to not just that city, but to the province of BC. And just, you know, the way they played really exemplified a lot of what hockey wants itself to be, right? They're, you know, they care about others, and they're kind people, and they worked hard, were dedicated, and they did everything the right way. So I thought that the ceremony did them justice. It was a really special night and really well done in Vancouver.
3-0 the final, and a couple of different things I want to branch off and discuss about that game. But I guess first off, we have this discussion anytime somebody retires or they're honored at some point in their careers. And again, a very special career both of them had. And to play with your twin brother for 18 seasons is very, very special. And as you said, they meant a lot to the game of hockey outside of Vancouver, and especially in that market. They did change the game in a lot of ways, too. And you know, today's modern cycle is certainly what we saw the Sedin twins do for so many years in those Canuck colors. Your thought on them and the Hall of Fame, because I know that has certainly been a talking point around these parts the last couple of days, too.
I think they're Hall of Famers. They're, you know, I'm trying to change my view of the Hall of Fame from, you know, did this guy's numbers meet that guy's numbers, and you know, trying to overthink it so much, and just when they played, did you consider them, you know, among the most elite, the best, the most special players in the league when they were at their best? And the answer is an easy yes, right? I mean, there were, you know, they both won an Art Ross Trophy. You know, they were among the game's best for a number of years, and even in their worst seasons, were still exceptionally valuable guys. I know they retired after seasons where they had like 50 points. You know, it definitely had fallen off, but their peak was high enough, their run was long enough. For me, they're Hall of Famers. Yeah.
Today's modern Canuck team, it certainly has had a great season. They have built a nice young core there with another special Swede, Elias Pettersson. But I want to focus in, funny enough, on another Swede in goal, Jacob Markstrom. 49 stops last night. Sets the franchise record for saves in a shutout in the regular season for the Vancouver Canucks, did Markstrom. And you know, there's been a lot of talk about his future. What would you do in net with Markstrom? Because UFA at season's end, they like where Demko is at. They like DiPietro in their system. And his age maybe doesn't line up for their next competitive window. It's really tricky with term and dollars for a UFA goaltender, especially in a market this summer that will have, you know, other big names on it, including potentially a Braden Holtby from Washington. So just your thoughts on Markstrom and his future. What would you do if you're Jim Benning?
Well, first off, I think he's been fantastic and deserving of a new deal, a good deal. I think the Canucks would love to have him, and he'd like to be there. You know, now it's just a matter of gauging the market, and it's so hard to guarantee yourself good goaltending. If you could guarantee yourself good goaltending, teams would pay ungodly sums of money for that. And the problem is when teams have tried to do that, and they've said, all right, we're going to guarantee ourselves good goaltending. We're going to lock up Price, and we're going to lock up Bobrovsky and, you know, those guys. It hasn't panned out. And so there's a number for me where I'd just not be comfortable spending, you know, more than, say, $7, $8 million a year at a goaltender. I just think right now it's the risk of not getting return for that money is too high. So for Markstrom, it's, you know, how much does he want? Can you get him, you know, for a shorter term, maybe 4 years? In the $6-7 million range, or is he able to command more than that on the open market? There's certainly a cutoff point, but if I'm Jim Benning, I'm making an effort to get him back.
What about on the other side? Chicago had a 5-game win streak right before the All-Star break, and since then they've lost 6 of 7. Last night, their 5th loss in a row, a couple overtime losses mixed in there in that 5-game streak. But all of a sudden, when it looked like potentially they could have their name in the playoff conversation, it's fallen right out. What's gone wrong, or what's happened in Chicago?
Well, I you know, I've had to change my tune on the Blackhawks a couple times because I thought, you know, after that winning streak, looking at their roster, you can so easy to talk yourself into good goaltending. And I've said that on this show before, too. Good goaltending, they can score, have some elite veteran guys. But, like, if Taves and Kane, you know, I should say Kane is a special guy still. Taves is, you know, a very good player. after that, you know, the fall off is pretty significant. I guess DeBrincat still scores you a lot of goals, but there's just so many question marks in that lineup. And, you know, the fact that they're starting to fall behind farther at this time of year, this run of tough games for them has really set them back. I would say that this morning I woke up more of a doubter of the Blackhawks than I was even just last week.
He is Justin Bourne, Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto, and Sportsnet.ca also does some work for The Athletic. He's our guest every Thursday at this time on Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. Let's shift locally. The Flames have struggled mightily this season with consistency, and after the start of the road trip when they had 6-2 victories against Vancouver and San Jose, it looked like maybe this thing was turning in the right direction again. They go to L.A. and lose to the bottom feeder Kings for the third time this season, 5-3 last night. They're minus 14 in the goal differential. I keep coming back to that number, Mr. Bourne, because when teams are in the negative, especially that deep in the red, things just usually try to, you know, find themselves on the outside of the playoffs rather than inside the playoffs. Why can't this Flames team figure things out? What is the biggest reason in your eyes they're struggling with that consistency?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, Mark Giordano being out is huge for them just because he was a guy who brought that every single night, right? You could count on the effort and having Giordano in the lineup. So when he's not there, a team that was already inconsistent as a group lost a little bit of its stability. And, you know, there's just the nights where they don't seem to be able, you know, Matthew Tkachuk is the only guy a lot of nights who seems to have a pulse, like just to have that energy, that vibrancy, and the rest of the lineup, it seems to, you know, like I said, it's just lagging behind a little bit. And it seems to be energy, and I know it's never as simple as energy, but for whatever reason, the pop that we saw from that team last year doesn't seem to be there. You know, and you can sense frustration now. I know you saw more from Goodrow earlier in the season. You're hearing it from Jeff Ward in press conferences, and it just seems like a team that, you know, they have a fairly easy schedule the rest of the way, but, you know, the way they look, you know, games like last night show you anything can happen and things are trending positively.
Brad Schilling was on Sportsnet last night and he said, you know, with the Hamonic and Geo injuries, the deadline upcoming, you take your cues from your team and how they're playing. If you're Brad Schilling, if you're wearing his hat today, what are you doing in 10 days' time at the deadline? Because kind of find it hard to see this team as buyers right now. What about you?
Well, you're right that it's, you know, you're not sure if it's the right thing to do, but I feel like because, you know, we know last year how good this team was, you know, they won the Western Conference. You know, their makeup's not that much different. They've been through a lot this year, a lot of ups and downs, and it's been a roller coaster. I kind of feel like you got to give this team a shot, and part of the reason I say that is just because if you look at the way teams are trending, I just look at our Canadian teams. You know, Vancouver has a lot of great young talent that you expect in years to come is going to be, you know, still very effective. And I feel the same way about Edmonton. You know, Calgary is kind of on the older side of their core. I feel like they are in more of a rush to have success now with guys like Geo and Goodrow and Monahan. So I feel like you can't really push this thing off and say, we'll get them next year. I think they should be buyers. And I think the conference is soft enough that if they buy, Geo ends up coming back, you get another good piece. I think that can change the feel and look at this team pretty quick.
Fun matchup this evening. Speaking of Canadian teams, we'll stay in the Pacific and ask you about the Oilers because they lose Connor McDavid for a few weeks here with that injury lower body. And everyone's saying, okay, now finally is the time where the Oilers potentially drop out of the playoff mix, especially with how things are so tight in that Pacific division. They win the first game without McDavid on the back of Leon Draisaitl. And I think the answer is probably pretty obvious. He already leads the league by 8 points when it comes to scoring. If the Oilers come out of this McDavid absence still in the top three in their division, how realistic or is it an automatic in your eyes that Leon Draisaitl could be the Hart Trophy winner?
Well, that's a good question. And it's crazy because prior to the McDavid injury, there wasn't even a window for Draisaitl to get through to win the Hart. Like, you know, if they had both played 82 games and, you know, Draisaitl had led McDavid by 5 points at season's end, like McDavid would have been my Hart pick every single time. I think he changes how teams defend. I think he opens up room for Draisaitl. I think he's the driver there. This would change things, giving Draisaitl the chance in a crucial part of the season when they need him more than ever. If he's able to put the team on his back and carry them through 2 or 3 weeks, then yes, you know, Draisaitl goes from, you know, on the outside of the conversation to one of the two or three guys where who would have a realistic chance of getting my vote for sure.
They are in Tampa this evening. It's a 5 o'clock start for those in this area on Sportsnet West as they are now on the East on a lengthy road trip. And yes, without Connor McDavid, all eyes on Leon Draisaitl at 5 o'clock, Edmonton and Tampa tonight on Sportsnet. Stay in the Western Conference. Winnipeg Jets are somehow still in the playoff race. So were you surprised or is the timing still curious for you when it comes to that Paul Maurice extension?
You know, I feel like they had to do something. You know, they're at the point where Maurice's contract was expiring. He's taken a team that, you know, has not, you know, they were had serious deficiency. They lost three of the right side defensemen who were among their best players. So, you know, they had to at some point say acknowledge what he's done, that they are still in the playoff race in February, given their losses. Speaks to his ability to take a team with less tools and still have success. So, I think it was just one of those things where it came to a point they had to do something, and he's done enough to warrant an extension. I like that the Jets are still hanging around. I think they've got some resilient guys there, and guys like Wheeler and Shifley, the veteran presences there. And, you know, the thing for me now, so the Maurice thing doesn't surprise me so much, but we've heard Sheveldayoff say multiple insiders had the quote, you know, I want to reward my team for what they've done. The word reward was brought up a couple times, and it was funny how many different insiders came across that quote independently. Like, he clearly wanted it out there that he wants to do good for his team. So you see what teams are doing and making that move happen earlier and just how advantageous it is getting guys in your lineup earlier and getting points earlier. I would like to see them make a move soon if he intends to reward his team.
It's almost the same as, like, you know, coaching change, you get that automatic boost. Yeah, if they make a trade now, I mean, they're right there. We mentioned Calgary struggles at minus 14 in the goal differential. Winnipeg is right behind them. You know, they're minus 2 in the goal differential, but 1 point back. So I guess what you're just saying, and I'm right there with you, you make a trade now, that 1 point, you know, you go on a run of 4 or 5 games, and that could be some pretty big separation when things are so tight.
That's it, right? I mean, that's all you're looking for at this point, is just to put this string together a run. There's not enough hockey left, you know, that if you go on a run that you're really going to fall too far behind. So if you can put together a run of games right now, you can set yourself up in a nice position. So we're seeing teams be active earlier than actual deadline day, and I think it makes a lot of sense to me.
Just a few more with Justin Bourne. He joins us every Thursday at this time on Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. He, of course, a big part of Hockey Central on Sportsnet in Toronto, and, of course, does some work with Sportsnet.ca and The Athletic. A serious topic now. We don't do a lot of this in terms of, you know, we talk about the game for a living and we talk about fun and what happens on the ice, but you thought of his family and you thought of what things were like off the ice as you saw Jay Bouwmeester collapse after a shift in Anaheim on Tuesday. He remains in hospital. Things look to be okay. Could be the end of his career for what we know in terms of his playing life, but just a thought on what Jay Bouwmeester went through, and I guess just kudos to Doug Armstrong, because maybe they don't get talked about enough, but a lot of these guys, you know, forever thankful and grateful for the medical staff, and they were on full display in Anaheim on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, obviously just a horrific evening there in Anaheim, but it's amazing the work that they do. The people around the players in the NHL and, you know, at all levels of professional sport, the people around those players are so incredible at what they do too. And it's not often we get to shine a light on that. And, you know, that Bouwmeester, you know, that we're not talking about this tragedy, you know, or this incident in the more tragic light is because of the great work of the people around the rinks, the doctors, the medical personnel and the staffs in general. So, cool that he had his dad there to be with him. Great that he seems to be doing well. And it's, you know, where, as I said, we're not talking about this much differently because it's scary. And hockey is a fast game. You know, the guys put their bodies through a lot. You know, I even think the way pucks are shot now these days, hard and high all the time. Like, at some point, I fear that this, you know, that we'll be talking about something even more dire than this. So happy for Bouwmeester, a league-wide recognized good guy, that it seems he's going to come out of this on the right side. But, yeah, it's a scary sport, and you just never know. You have to appreciate every day.
No doubt about it. Well said, my friend. Let's shift gears and finish off this hockey portion with some Eastern Conference teams, because we talk a lot about the West and the wild card chase here, obviously on this side of things on the continent. But what about over there in your neck of the woods? I know we talked to you a lot about Philadelphia. You're a big fan of what the Flyers are doing. Very curious to see what they do at the deadline. And then you've got teams like Carolina and Florida kind of right there on their tails. And then Columbus, not home and cooled at 70 points. How do you break down the Eastern Conference wildcard race right now?
Yeah, I'm kind of trying to figure out what Carolina's going to be. This is something that as soon as I get to work here, I intend to look into. I can't, you know, this is a team that every year their analytics are through the roof. Like their shot numbers, their shot attempts, shot quality, everything is high, 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 and the results haven't matched it necessarily. And there was a run of years where you just said, well, their goaltending sucks. Their goaltending doesn't really suck right now. So I can't make sense of what they're going to be. I think they're a team that has a ton of talent that can climb the standings still. I'm more skeptical on Columbus. I like the Flyers. And then this Florida and Toronto thing has been a tight battle here. And basically just waiting for one team to take the bull by the horns. And as we talked about just a few moments earlier, go on a run. You know, string together six wins and just declare yourself as the team who's going to take that third seed. Because right now, if you don't have the third seed in the Atlantic, you're not in the wild card spot either. So that fight is one worth watching every night. And, you know, there's still 20-some games to go. But it certainly has become scoreboard watching for Toronto and Florida every night.
It's almost like, yeah, you make the playoffs and you face a Tampa or Boston. Oh, good luck. Or you miss the playoffs. So it's a very interesting race. And you mentioned that run. I mean, Boston's doing all they can to try and hold off Tampa. I have no idea. How do you think that thing finishes out over the next 20 games in the Atlantic?
I just think Tampa's too good, man. I really, this run has been better than we expected from Tampa.
Yeah.
22-1 in their last 23. I know it's an arbitrary cutoff point, but since they really turned their season around, and then no signs of slowing down. It's every reason that we thought Tampa was so good before the season is finally being fleshed out. You know, Andrei Vasilevsky has gone from a guy who's below a 900 just a couple months ago to a 920, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gets in the Vezina conversation by the end of the year. Kucherov's been hot. Stamkos playing well. You know, obviously Victor Hedman is Victor Hedman. So the reasons we thought they were good preseason are finally starting to show their head.
I guess we can certainly wind this up next week even more, but as we let you go today, final one for you. We're now, what, 11 days away from the deadline. In the Eastern Conference, what team intrigues you the most about what they may or may not do on deadline day in a couple weeks?
I think probably the Montreal Canadiens, just because, you know, we're at the point where they got to be done lying to themselves about the playoffs, like it ain't happening. So, you know, now do you say, okay, is Jeff Petrie a guy we can move? Is Ilya Kovalchuk a guy we can move? I know Tomas Tatar got a little whacked, a little hurt last night, but is he someone who would be interesting to a team? You know, I know it's tough to rebuild in big markets, but Toronto had their one-year teardown, and, you know, the benefits from that are self-evident. So, you know, Montreal might have to do a little honest self-appraisal, and I know that's hard when you're a guy like Bergevin who's been there and been the guy who's been building it for 5 years to have to tear it down. Your own work down would be a little depressing, but, you know, it depends if you want to be honest with yourself or if you want to try to sort of smoke and mirrors this thing to keep your job.
Justin, good stuff. As always, we'll let you go. Get to work and get on with your day, but appreciate your time as always, man.
For sure. Well, thank you.